A thing that looks like a police box standing in a junkyard. It can move anywhere.
Haven,
concentrate
on Sin. Give priority to the detectors and the navigation systems.
There is a corridor. And the corridor is time. It surrounds all things.
On display, I eventually had to go down to the cellar.
That's the display department.
With a torch.
The lights are probably gone.
So had the stairs.
Yours is number 6.
I am not a number. I am a person.
Welcome to British Invaders, episode 314. This is the podcast all about British science fiction television, and this time we are continuing our discussion about The Mad Death. This is Brian from Canada.
And this is Eamon from England. Hello. Yes, The Mad Death, a series that takes us back to 1983, BBC One. We have three 60-minute episodes to look at. And appropriately enough for a show called British Invaders, we have the risks of rabies crossing the English Channel and infecting Britain. That was one of the sort of moral panics, or I suppose societal panics of the time, Brian.
Yes, absolutely. And this is definitely a case of the concerns of the time being reflected in what was being produced for television drama. So going on a little bit further with the story, the epidemic, of course, spreads. More and more animals are infected. The government appeals to the public to contain and quarantine their own animals and to bring animals in for quarantine and so on.
Yes, absolutely. This appeal to all the large sort of farm owners with their animals, but also the domestic pets, the cats and dogs, keep them indoors, quarantine them. Meanwhile, of course, we've got our senior vet, Michael Hilliard, who I describe as a sort of action man figure in his combat jacket with his rifle, more or less sort of running around the countryside, hunting down and shooting mad animals or infected animals. And of course, we've got, as you've said, Brian, this interesting mix of that sort of action with this appeal to the traditional animal-loving Brits to effectively to keep calm and carry on and keep your pets indoors. But it doesn't quite work out, and the Brits don't stay very calm, or at least the ones we meet don't seem to.
Yes, there's a great deal of that, and this is something that really comes to the fore in this show, that you have this, I think, justified idea that the British tend to be animal lovers and that there are lots of dog lovers and people who are very close to their pets. And when the government and health department and so on are saying, look, this is a real concern, you can't just go on as normal with your pets. People don't go along with that so easily. And this affection for their animals is something that brings a lot of ordinary people into opposition with the people who are trying to fix this issue and contain this epidemic.
Yes, and I'm thinking, because obviously we've got the government and some parts of the civil servants, and I think there's a minister in there. We've got a medical officer in Dr. Maitland. We've got this senior veterinary officer, Michael Hilliard. And we do get some scenes of sort of, I don't know if you'd call them boardroom or planning rooms, where there's maps and they're pushing round sort of markers. But of course, that stuff, although it's part of the actual planning for how you would deal with a disaster, doesn't make for great TV. So I think this is why we do see Drs. Maitland and Hilliard sort of dashing around the countryside, and a certain amount of jeopardy for both characters as we go along. Not that it stops them finding a little bit of time in their busy schedules to rekindle their old romantic flame for each other as well, Brian.
Yes, there is that in here, which, okay, it's there. I don't know that it adds a lot to the story or the issues that they're dealing with, but certainly they keep lots of things going, which helps the energy with this. And while you have some excitement with those things and with them running around and the rifles coming out, and you know the jeopardy is raised, you do have a lot of these meeting room discussions and the sort of maps and planning. And that stuff is actually really good. It's quite compelling. It isn't sort of dull as some people might have a concern that it would be. It's actually quite good.
It's interesting stuff. An interesting mix they've given us in this show.
Very much so.
So after all this dashing about, and of course the one scene where they're in bed together, Dr. Maitland is going to end up in a sort of very peculiar peril, partially of her own making and partially to do with a character that we mentioned in the last episode. So there's a sort of tense, dramatic ending for the show, which we won't give away. And I did mention this before, Brian. For some reason, it reminded me of a reasonably well-known book and film, The Andromeda Strain by Michael Crichton. Of course, most famous for Jurassic Park, I guess. But in that, the very sort of sensible and highly technical scientific investigation into a possible microorganism that's arrived from space is so neat and scientific that they had to sort of tack on a slightly silly action sequence at the end to sort of bring it to a dramatic conclusion, I thought. And I did feel there was a little bit of that here, that the meeting room stuff and the appeals to the public, there has to be some bits of Dr. Hilliard hanging out of helicopters with his rifle.
Yes, that's an interesting point. You do have a certain amount of it that is there because it meets the kind of structure of the TV program they wanted to make. But it does also help to show us the scope of the problem that, you know, in order to try to contain this, they have to be going all over the place in a helicopter and this sort of thing. So it does help to raise the stakes in some ways, I think.
Yes, it does indeed. And it's, you know, it does mean that the action sort of bowls along quite nicely and leads towards a dramatic conclusion. So it is that time when I pause as ever, Brian, to look at society's fears at the time and to notice that the sort of TV dramas that you and I cover quite a lot so often are a reflection of particular sort of panics and fears and obsessions of society.
Absolutely. That really happens a lot. And it's interesting to see that rabies, of all things, comes to the fore here.
Yes. And I mean, I was looking back and I was thinking in the 1950s, of course, we had Quatermass. We've covered quite a few 60s shows about mind control, some stuff about robots and supercomputers, and then the brainwashing of spies and so on, who had to be controlled and particularly contained, maybe on a particular island I'm thinking of, I guess, from the 60s.
Yes, there were certainly things like that. And in the 70s, we had sort of environmental concerns with things like Doomwatch and concerns about diseases and science gone wrong. With then you get into things like Survivors. And there were starting to be things like nuclear concerns being reflected and sort of end of the world type things and even some economic things. But these sort of apocalyptic scenarios started becoming a big thing that people were thinking about. And moving into the 80s, you get more and more about fears of nuclear weapons and nuclear power and this sort of thing. And then you do get to things like rabies and other sort of disease and health concerns.
Yes, the things that have us quaking behind the TV sofas, Brian. I mean, I do remember that, you know, in the 80s and in the 70s, I guess, the rabies thing was a big fear in Britain. This idea that it was on the continent of Europe and that somehow it would cross the channel. And I do remember all the posters that you would see about it. You know, don't bring your pets, don't smuggle pets, don't watch out for infected animals. They would be certainly at airports and ports and so on. And it's that sort of stuff that leads us to the mad death, I guess, which actually looks at what would happen if rabies did arrive in Britain.
Yeah, it's fascinating. Looking at it now, it seems a bit out of the blue to have this big sort of speculative show based on rabies. But at the time, it was definitely something people were thinking about.
Yes, and I think about the other 80s TV shows that we've covered, and two spring to mind. One, of course, is the almost appallingly terrifying threads about the nuclear attack on Sheffield. And then, of course, Edge of Darkness, which is a very intense watch about a sort of father trying to find out who murdered his daughter. And it leads him into a sort of conspiracy about nuclear power and nuclear waste, which is fascinating. And this is, I think, bracketed. I mean, I'm going to put them in the same sort of 80s bracket. I'm not sure if The Mad Death is quite as scary as, say, Threads is. But then again, Threads is an extremely high bar that is so well made and so utterly, utterly sort of awful to watch in a way.
Yes. Well, Threads and The Edge of Darkness, both with their sort of nuclear concerns, had very high stakes. And especially for Threads, were written and directed and produced to be very intense and to have quite dark aspects and quite dark endings to them. Where The Mad Death is well done, it has its own kind of intensity to it, but it was never intended to be the type of thing that Threads or The Edge of Darkness is, I would say.
Yeah, interesting stuff. As I say, I do bracket them together, but it is its own thing in a way. And as I say, you know, for some reason, Britain was terrified of rabies in the 80s. And here's a show all about that.
Yeah, that's fascinating that we can see these things that reflect that. So let's get into some of our own thoughts a little bit more than we already have. So, Eamon, what did you like about The Mad Death?
So there's lots to like about The Mad Death, I think, Brian. I do like the fact that it's shot on film. There's a lot of outdoors stuff to sort of, I suppose, level out or balance with the meeting room stuff that's probably filmed on set. So I like the fact that they took the production outdoors, they shot it on film. That part of it, I think, works very well.
Yes, I think all of that really did work. I would say what I enjoyed a lot with this was the social commentary aspect and the idea that the way that people would react to these things going on was to say our pets, our interaction with our pets and caring for our pets is more important. And what you are telling us as this big emergency situation really isn't. And sort of how people are brought into opposition with these government and medical personnel, not because of having sort of extreme views, but because of their caring and their passion for domestic animals. So that, I thought, was really well done and quite fascinating.
Yes, it's amazing, really, that they have this resistance from the British public who say, yes, of course you can do your contain and control strategy, but just not my pets, not my animals. It doesn't apply to us. And I suppose most epitomised by the slightly eccentric Miss Stonecroft in her sort of creaky old house filled with animals, who doesn't believe any of this stuff applies to her animals, of course, and that will lead to a rather dramatic confrontation in this series. So yeah, the way they worked in, you know, not just the medicine and the science and the outdoorsy sort of action hero stuff, but the social commentary to say, you know, maybe the Brits would have a real struggle with this sort of thing because of our history of loving our pets so much.
Yeah, and I don't think it is sort of speaking ill of animal lovers in particular. I think it sort of speaks to the human condition and how people react when things that they care about are brought under threat or brought into a situation where they have to be dealt with differently from how they'd want to.
Yeah, intriguing. I liked the animal wrangling, and if that's the right expression. I think, you know, the sequences of mad and aggressive foxes, dogs, and so on are very well done. In our last episode, I mentioned a couple of stunt men wrestling with dummy animals, but I would say that's really not a problem. Most of the animal stuff is actually highly effective. And, you know, the idea of dangerous animals menacing children or even soldiers is quite, you know, it's quite spooky and gripping stuff, Brian.
Yes, absolutely. We also had a quite remarkable performance by Ed Bishop. I think all of the performances in this were good and they were quite compelling. But Ed Bishop playing this businessman in the hospital with rabies was really compelling. I thought he was really very good with that.
He was terrific. I mean, he's Ed Bishop. He's always terrific. We love him here on British Invaders. But yes, particularly as he gets into the later stages, the medics, the nurses realize what's going on. And there you have Ed Bishop strapped to a hospital bed, literally foaming at the mouth. Incredibly effective, quite scary stuff. And the same happens to his girlfriend shortly afterwards. And I thought the actors who had to portray this did it extremely well.
What did you think of the performances in general?
I think they're all pretty good, actually. I mean, I do think it's a little bit like watching Jimmy Garland and Delly Lomas from two other shows roaming around the 80s countryside, one in his combat jacket and the other in some... I think Barbara Kellerman always gets some interesting outfits to wear whenever we talk about her, Brian. So there's a few nice 80s jumpsuits for her. But, you know, the performances throughout, I think, are pretty good in this show. We haven't mentioned, I think, a couple of civil servants and the minister and so on, but they're all very good. But I would shout out to those two particular actors who have to do the hospital scenes where their bodies are sort of gripped by horrible spasms while at the same time developing the sort of hydrophobia, fear of water that leads them to foam at the mouth. It's quite terrifying stuff.
Yes, absolutely. And I think Brenda Bruce as Miss Stonecroft is also very good, you know, as this person who is, you know, normally would be a somewhat reclusive, very nice, innocent woman who's a pet lover who has these many dogs. But in this situation, she does some pretty extreme things.
Yes, a great performance from Brenda Bruce as a sort of creepy old sort of mad cat and dog lady, I suppose. Yeah, it's great stuff. I did like the sort of Miss Havisham in her decaying mansion feel to that and the way that's shot as well. But yeah, I mean, what about yourself with the performances? I guess you felt that most of them were pretty good as well.
Yeah, I felt they were quite strong across the board, for sure. So, Dr. Amon, what do you have to say about some of the medical things that were on show here? Because there was really quite a bit.
Well, I'd say spot on to the producers, writers and actors, directors of The Mad Death back in 1981 when they were filming this, because certainly the depiction of hospitals in the 80s, and I worked in hospitals in the 80s, so they got that very accurate. I think the doctor's initial bafflement at Ed Bishop's symptoms, I suppose I would put in a little bracket, say, take a fuller history, guys, you might work it out. But anyway, I think that's very good. And then, of course, the depiction of the two actors who are struggling in their hospital beds is just terrific. I have to say, I've only ever seen rabies on film, film of actual rabies victims. Thankfully, I've never had to deal with a case in real life, but it does look remarkably similar to what I've seen of actual cases. So I would say the medicine, great, spot on, well done to all involved, and particularly, as I say, to Ed Bishop, who carries the load of that first infected patient and does it so well.
I have the impression that the science in general here and, you know, how they were dealing with containment and those types of things, it all looked very well thought out and quite realistic to me as well.
Yes, and I mean, you know, listeners will have detected as I've gone along that in a way the science is so well portrayed and so neat, and the planning and organization are so sort of well laid out that they do have to create some dramatic action sequences and, of course, the romance to keep us always entertained and interested. I don't think it's too much of a problem, but, you know, it does mean, as I say, action man Michael Hilliard hanging out of helicopters, chasing mad dogs across the Scottish countryside. And actually, there's not much wrong with that. It's quite enjoyable. So I enjoyed that part as well, but I really did enjoy the medical parts and the science parts. I'm not sure I ever thought I would be talking about Ed Bishop strapped to a British hospital bed foaming at the mouth, Brian, but there we go. This show, this podcast takes us to some strange places sometimes.
Absolutely. So do you have any thoughts on the negative side? What did you not like so much about the Mad Death?
I did have a slight lag in the middle, and I did wonder if the 3 hours, if they'd been perhaps edited down to 2 hours. I mean, I never saw the film version that they put out on VHS, but I did think it sort of sagged a little in places, but not too bad. Apart from that, I'm not really sure I've got too many sort of like negatives to say about this show, Brian. What about yourself?
Well, I wasn't bothered by the pacing in that way, but one thing that annoyed me a little bit was their portrayal of foreigners in this show. There's the classic thing, often British and American shows portraying each other in a less than positive light. So we have this American businessman, and Ed Bishop's performance when he's sick with rabies is brilliant. And at that point, that's great. But they're also portraying him as the sort of idiot American who, you know, sort of foolishly takes in and adopts this random fox. And he's also portrayed as sort of morally being not great because they show him with a family and with a mistress and sort of potentially not the best stuff in his business dealings even. So the portrayal of the one American in the show is not great. And then, of course, you have the French person sort of foolishly bringing her pet cat, which we know is infected, smuggling this cat into the country. So I did sort of feel that their portrayal of the two characters who are not British was not great.
Yes, I think that's a very good point, actually, Brian. I mean, you're quite right, because the French lady, I think, is, again, she's portrayed as the sort of classic French mistress in her fur coat coming to visit her lover and can't be without her cat, so brings it smuggled inside the fur coat. Where I think at the time, certainly from the publicity campaigns, the fear was much more about British people going abroad and then deciding to bring an animal back into the country without the quarantine process. But so, yes, it does show perhaps a slightly British attitude to foreigners in this 80s show, which is sad in a way, but there you go.
Yeah, it's a minor point all in all, but it certainly is something that I noticed. But one of the few negative points that I had with this, when Barbara Kellerman as Anne Maitland is going off into the woods to help with these issues, there are some odd wardrobe choices, as you've noted. I would maybe expect her to not go for quite so glamorous options as she seems to sometimes.
Oh, I just love Barbara Kellerman's outfits, whatever show she's in. I may have to start a Facebook page just for Barbara Kellerman's clothes, or post the montage on our British Invaders page.
Yes, indeed. Sure.
She's great.
Yes, she was very good, for sure. Those choices, I might have preferred to see something else. But yeah, certainly the performances and what they were doing with it, all of that was good. And, you know, you have moments I mentioned last time, and this was one of a number of moments dealing with how the public deals with the situation, where this particular moment they're looking at this letter to the editor, where the person who's writing this letter says, you know, why are you taking people's pets, their only companionship in life, why are you taking them away when there's only been one victim, one human victim of rabies, and saying this is an epidemic and that there's a real risk is ridiculous. It can't be true. You know, this is what this person writing this this letter is saying, and the people dealing with this and seeing this letter, who are actually dealing with the situation, are saying, you know, well, it's actually not just one person, it's now two or three people, and so on and so forth, that they're seeing just what the situation really looks like. So those kinds of things I thought worked really well in it.
Okay. I mean, that's very good stuff to talk about, actually. Very interesting. It does have the reputation of being a very scary show from the 80s. I think a show that people remembered seeing some or all of when they were quite young, and then, you know, probably didn't have any way of watching it again. Maybe didn't record it on their own VHS, maybe didn't have the VHS film version. And of course, we're familiar with the expression, is it from John Nathan Turner, who said the memory cheats about scary shows, Brian?
It absolutely is, yeah. That how you remember shows and how they actually are when you come back to them can be very different. And this has sometimes come up with Doctor Who and other shows where missing episodes are found in some cases, and it can be many years or even a few decades since people have seen them. And sometimes they're not quite how people remember them.
Yes, I think famously Tomb of the Cybermen, which of course was missing for many years, and then when it was found, it certainly was scary, but perhaps not quite as scary as its reputation had grown to over the years, I think, Brian.
Yes, that was definitely the case with that. It was found in about 1991 or 92, and people had remembered seeing it on broadcast in the 60s, and I think the people with the most vivid memories of it had seen it when they were maybe 8 years old. And of course, what they would see with, you know, 1990s television and 1990s expectations and being an adult were quite different.
Yes. So is it, I mean, you know, is the Mad Death perhaps as scary as its reputation led us to believe, do you think?
That's a hard question. I think it has, it does very, very well on the sort of intellectual scariness of the ideas being very rich and giving us, you know, a lot to think about and a lot to fear in that way. But I'm not sure that in terms of the intensity of what's on screen, the sort of thrill scare, maybe in that way it isn't quite what it's reputed to be. I don't know.
Okay. I mean, I will say that the sequence of Ed Bishop with rabies will stick with me for some time, as will that remarkably creepy title sequence. And you know, Brian, I love a scary title sequence. This one's particularly chilling and well done, I think.
Yes, absolutely. That it's, in terms of being a spooky title sequence, it's one of the stronger ones we've seen, I think.
Okay. Anything else to say in the plus or minuses columns before we get to make our own recommendations on the Mad Death, Brian?
I think we should go to our recommendations.
Okay. Do you want to start us off?
Sure. I enjoyed this a lot. I thought it was very well done. So yes, I'm definitely going to recommend it. It gives you a lot to think about. I think it's probably best watched in these three separate episodes, one at a time, which is what I did. But I think it's definitely worth watching and definitely worth thinking about. And I may come back and look at this again, because it certainly has a lot to it. So yes, I definitely would recommend this.
Okay, I'm going to join you in recommending The Mad Death. I enjoyed it, and I've certainly enjoyed talking about it. And it's interesting social commentary on how we Brits would actually react to such a crisis. I would say it's perhaps slightly pricey at £14 and no extras on the DVD. So I would have liked either some extras or a cheaper price, or maybe for it to appear more cheaply on one of the streamers. But I suppose it's not inconceivable this could eventually turn up on BritBox, which as we record, there is news about it being extended to as it's at the BBC and ITV's streaming service. So we shall see, I guess, Brian. But yes, a cautious recommendation from me as well for The Mad Death.
Yes, and maybe that price will come down a little bit, or maybe it will show up in the used market more. But very good. Interesting show.
Fascinating stuff, yeah. Do look out for a cheaper copy, maybe.
So, in summary, The Mad Death brought us the fear and the actual reality in this show of an epidemic of rabies happening in the 1980s with this woman from France smuggling her cat that was infected by a fox into England. And from there, between cats and dogs and foxes, the spread of rabies through animals and into people as well. And the reaction that many people in the UK had in this scenario, that they were more interested in protecting their own pets and their relationships with their pets rather than dealing with this epidemic, which many people did not realize or did not believe was that serious, when in fact it does become very serious. And we have planning and tracking down of infected animals, and we have more and more going on with this, bringing us to an intense conclusion.
Great stuff. And please tell us if you have particular memories of watching The Mad Death when it was on in the 80s.
Absolutely. I'd love to hear more comments bringing it into context for people's memories of how it was in that time when people were thinking more about the potential of problems with rabies.
And please join us next time when we're coming from 1983 to 2016 to an ITV show called Him. It's a show about a teen, dare I say a troubled teen, with telekinetic powers. So it's a bit of actual sort of genuine science fiction for us, Brian, in a way. Something interesting to talk about when we come back.
Yes, absolutely. So until then, you can find us at BritishInvaders.com, where we have all of our past shows there. We've mentioned a couple of the shows that we've covered in this discussion as they've come up. And we also have our Facebook group. So if you search for British Invaders on Facebook, you can find us there. And we have always some good discussions going on there. And we also tell you a few episodes ahead what we'll be discussing.
We do indeed. Check the upcoming roster on the Facebook group. And British Invaders is also a proud member of the Voice of Geeks Network. Find out all the details at vognetwork.com.
Yes, indeed. So thank you for listening. And this is Brian from Canada signing off.
Yes, thank you very much indeed. And this is Eamon in England, I guess, saying please don't smuggle cats in fur coats.